Dave Consolazio alongside Sam Saig for episode 8 of Running the Option. Sam, how you doing?
Pretty excited, to tell you the truth.
Yep.
I feel like our podcast, Running the Option, got a shot in the arm on Saturday night with brand new storylines and chaos, which is all we asked for the last few weeks.
Last week, you asked straight up for just chaos and something crazy to happen, and last Saturday surpassed our wildest dreams.
Yeah.
We couldn't have handpicked a crazier Saturday. Of course, you have to start with the Wisconsin-Michigan State game. What's insane about that game is that when we previewed it, you said you wanted to see Russell Wilson in a situation where he had to come up big,
yeah.
And sure enough, he had that opportunity.
Yeah, I had a wish list. It was a dream scenario. I didn't know if it was going to happen. I really wanted it to. What I didn't count on is that with 10 minutes and 58 seconds left and the score 31-17 Michigan State, and to that point, Russell Wilson having a very pedestrian, to say the least, day, thrown two picks, was pressured the entire game. And in that fourth quarter, he became Russell Wilson the way that I wanted to see him become, and threw two touchdown passes, the one with a minute 26 left to Monty Ball, ties the game. And when that touchdown happened, I was immediately thinking Heisman moment. Like, if they go on to be undefeated, you can look back at that, if they were to win that game in overtime, and say there's his signature Heisman moment if he wants
it. Yeah, it was a methodical drive. He looked completely composed. He's completely unfazed all of a sudden by this road crowd that was giving him trouble the whole first half. And then ties the game up. It looks like we're heading to overtime. It looks like Wisconsin's going to pull it off after all. And then little did we know, the best was not even close to happening yet, as Kirk Cousins throws up a prayer of a Hail Mary, caught at the one, gets the ball in there, and I'm just going nuts at that point. And then the fact that the ruling on the field is no touchdown, it was to some degree clear that he did cross the goal line, but I was very impressed that the refs made that call, because it's a bold call to make. Even if it's the right call, even if it was quote-unquote clear that he crossed the plane, you never actually saw the football cross the plane. You knew from the way his shoulder was and that it was under his arm, but it wasn't 100% clear, so it was a bold call, but it was the right call.
Yeah, I mean, this was not the Doug Flutie play,
no.
You know, where it was caught. I mean, we've seen these plays before, and this one may rank even ahead of those, only, you know, the significance of this game and what it meant to Wisconsin's season and what we thought they could be. It wasn't like the Doug Flutie play or the LSU play where Devery Henderson catches it. This was one of the most debatable call. Some people still think that the game should have gone to overtime. Now I'm with you. I think the ball crosses the plane, but it's so close that there are still people that are like, I'm not convinced that the call should have been
overturned.
Right,
because technically, by the rule, and why I thought it was going to overtime, was it has to be indisputable evidence, and you could dispute it.
You can dispute. I mean, that's the argument I heard all day today on TV.
Right.
Is that they were like, if you're asking if it can be disputed, they said, yes, it can be disputed. So what a time in a game like that where it really was the game that everybody had their eye on, for that kind of play to occur, because how many times do we see Hail Marys thrown up? For it to occur in that kind of a game is pretty amazing.
Incredible finish, and I mean, I'm glad they got the call, in my opinion, right, but you're right, I should preface that by saying in my opinion,
right.
Because while it looked clear to me, we never did see full photographic evidence, which is why, by the book, maybe it should have gone to overtime.
The last thing on that game is Kirk Cousins. You were saying, and I agreed, that he was going to have a huge game. And that prayer aside, because it did obviously help the stats, but to throw for 290 yards, three touchdowns, and no picks, this guy's career. I mean, what's amazing to me is that win over Michigan was a program win. D'Antonio went on for a long time about that win, to beat Michigan when they were undefeated. Then to come back with this game is unbelievable. And Kirk Cousins' career, really, you have to look at and say, what a career he's had at Michigan State to this point.
Criminally underrated.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Wisconsin was off to that 14-0 lead. I thought at that point they were just going to roll, and then sure enough, Michigan State fights back. But that game turned out to just be a precursor to an even bigger shocker. Oklahoma loses to Texas Tech at home. Texas Tech, a 29-point underdog. By the spread standards, that was the biggest upset in Big 12 history. And I don't think you just have to say by spread standards. I don't think you're ever going to find a bigger upset in Big 12 history. This is a team that haven't lost in Oklahoma in 39 games since 2005. In my wildest dreams, no disrespect to Texas Tech, did I ever see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, my first thought is just that when we were looking at Alabama and LSU and trying to figure out who is their biggest competition, I mean, heading into this past weekend, who really has a chance to knock one of them off? And honestly, I might have put as my number one and two Oklahoma and Wisconsin. So for them to get knocked off when they were, to me, the two teams that I could think about lining up man-to-man and going head-to-head with those teams, it's incredible that it happened back-to-back in the way that it did. And I will say for Tommy Tuberville, he's been at Ole Miss, Auburn, and now Texas Tech, and he's now 5-5 against top five teams. Now, nothing against Auburn, Ole Miss, or Texas Tech, but to be 5-5 in games like this, it's amazing that this guy just channels something, and I think at halftime he was saying to his guys in the locker room, I've got some tricks up my sleeve, we're gonna get this done, and his players just seem to buy in a top five matchup to this type of thing.
I like how honest he was right after the game. He was saying, right, you know what, like, we know we're not a world beater defense, like, we knew we would just, if we made enough plays on offense and we just made a couple of plays on defense, we could hang on. He was realistic about that. And then this week he was talking about, you know, nobody was talking about Texas Tech. And you win a game like this, it does huge things for recruiting. It does huge things for the program. Really long term, huge for the Big 12. Because, I mean, to see a team like Texas Tech finally get away from the Mike Leach era and have a big win to fall back on in the present. But as those two games happened, I couldn't help but feel like the biggest beneficiaries were Stanford and Clemson. Now, that may just seem like an obvious statement, but, and I don't know if I'm throwing a curveball here or maybe you agree with me, but I feel like Wisconsin was a bigger threat to Stanford and Clemson's national championship hopes than Oklahoma was, because Oklahoma always controlled its own destiny. To some degree, Oklahoma State still controls their own destiny now. Wisconsin was the team I was concerned about for Stanford and Clemson, because if all three of those teams went undefeated, with the way that Wisconsin was looking and the way that they were rolling over teams, I felt like they might have ended up, when it was all said and done, ahead of those two teams and Boise State in the computers. So with them out of the way, the path has really opened up for Stanford and Clemson, because they obviously have tough games left on their schedule, but so too does Oklahoma State. I'm not so sure Oklahoma State's going to run the table. So
yeah, you know, Stanford and Clemson are definitely the top two beneficiaries, I think. And you could even make a case that not as much, but a little bit further behind them is Boise State feeling pretty good, only because, like you said, Stanford and Clemson still at least have some games that could trip them up. I mean, Clemson, the path looks pretty good. But for both teams, there's a chance they might lose. And if they do, to have eliminated Oklahoma and Wisconsin, and then those teams still have games left, maybe there is a scenario, a dream scenario, but still a scenario that gets Boise State back into the discussion.
Definitely, because Boise State, if there's no reason they're not going to finish undefeated. Right. I mean, looking at their schedule, there's no reason. Now, the positive to that is you're going to be undefeated when it's all said and done. The negative, of course, is that that Georgia, your signature win, came way too early. The TCU game, that's their big test, but that comes at home, and TCU isn't going to be necessarily respected as a huge test. But if they're undefeated, yeah, Stanford could lose this game to USC. Mm-hmm. They could lose to Oregon. They could lose the Pac-12 championship. Clemson's going to have to deal with Georgia Tech this week. South Carolina at the end of the regular season, the ACC championship. Oklahoma State has a bunch of tough games to get through. Kansas State, of course. So there is, all of a sudden, because I thought Oklahoma and Wisconsin were both going to run the table. Now, all of a sudden, yeah, there's a realistic shot that when it's all said and done, whoever wins that Alabama-LSU game is undefeated, and Boise State is undefeated. Yep. And at that point, there's just, you just can't keep Boise State out of that game. It's been too long coming. So you're right. Maybe that's what happens in their dream scenario.
Yeah, and the fans in Boise, they may be a little nervous this week because, you know, the BCS came out and they were ranked number 4. Great spot for them. I mean, you can't, of course, you got to love it right now. Now, the question that I'm going to really wonder the answer to for the computers and the polls is Stanford and Clemson both have meaningful road tests this week. Big games against teams, you know, the Georgia Tech game doesn't look as big as it should have been, but now the USC game for Stanford looks bigger than we thought it would be because USC has established itself as a legitimate team.
Yeah, I need to do a complete 180 from last week because we were talking about this whole BCS standing because we thought all these teams were going to go undefeated.
Right.
And I was saying, where is Stanford's big road test?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Yeah.
And here it is. This is it. This USC team is absolutely legitimate. That went over Notre Dame. What impressed me so much about USC is how far their defense has come in a very short period of time. I mean, all of a sudden, in their last two games, they've given up only 38 rushing yards a game. They've given up only 298 total yards a game, only 13 points. To Cal and Notre Dame, two respectable offenses.
Yeah, Monty Kiffin, I think he heard the criticism. I think he took a really long look at his personnel and his philosophy, and we wondered for so long, how can Monty Kiffin's defense play as bad as it has played? This guy's track record is too good to produce the results he's produced. So something has changed in that locker room. Everybody's more accountable. You can just see them flying to the ball a lot better. And the personnel has been there, I think. The talent has been there. Some people think it hasn't been, but I really think it has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're finally buying in fully. And you know, I think when you win in a season like this where there wasn't a lot to play for, but you get on a win streak, and now you have a meaningful game, like a bowl type of game this week, that's when you start to buy in philosophy-wise to everything your coaches are telling you, and I think it's really starting to translate.
The Cal game looked like a good old-fashioned USC game to me, but I wrote that off a little bit as it being Cal. Mm-hmm. But to do that at Notre Dame, a team that I respect a lot this year, really put it in perspective for me that this USC team is legit. And looking at the rest of their schedule, there's this Stanford game that they could lose. They could, of course, lose the Oregon game. But I could see them finishing with only three losses on the year. And they could obviously win this week. Who knows? So this is a very legitimate team. We were kind of wondering last week what would be better for Stanford because Stanford has USC and Notre Dame. But now, looking at it, I think this is substantially better because this one comes on the road, and that Arizona State win that they could potentially get if Arizona State wins the Pac-12 South and they get into that Pac-12 championship, that game could be a lot bigger because now if USC does only lose three games and they prove themselves to be a real contender, how much better does that ASU win look?
Oh, yeah.
And then in turn, so all this, I mean, the computers are going to have to factor all these things in. But I think now we were saying that Stanford getting that win over Oregon might have been the biggest win out of this whole collection.
Mm-hmm.
Now you might be able to add this USC win in there as another big one, so
yeah.
Very important.
You know, Stanford comes into this game. They have won 10 straight games by 25 or more points. No team in the history of college football has ever done that. That's the kind of roll they're on. So I think it's safe to say that the David Shaw era has picked up right where the Harbaugh era left off. The question is, it really is the first true road test for Stanford this season. They've played on the road, but this is the first combination of a quality opponent and a road team all in one. And we learned a little bit about Stanford, obviously, last week because it was a ranked team that they played technically. And depending on how you feel about Washington, the issue with Washington is they blew the doors off them so bad, especially with their rushing numbers, that kind of demolition almost devalues Washington as a program.
Right.
You know, Washington always struggled with Nebraska too, but it's just one of those things where will we learn if David Shaw and this Stanford team are ready to win a national championship in a game like this, or will we devalue USC if they blow them out? I mean, at what point do we start to credit Stanford with just being able to line up and do it against anybody?
Yeah, we were having the same argument with the Wisconsin-Michigan State game. How much should Wisconsin win by? How much would it help to beat them by a little or beat them by a lot? Well, they didn't beat them at all.
Right.
So, obviously, yeah, Stanford's only going to be worrying about winning the game. But I don't know if USC will be devalued in the same way that Washington might. Simply because, you know, it's still USC. But that is a crazy thing that when I've been looking at this game, you know, you look at the fact that Stanford has won three of the last four and you know, again, with the whole Harbaugh-Carroll rivalry was really good for a couple of years there. I don't know that I've ever seen an example in college football or any sport for that matter that two programs have so drastically switched power rankings. I mean, it was 2007. It was only 4 years ago that Stanford went into the Coliseum as a 39-point underdog and pulled off one of the biggest upsets in Pac-12 history.
Wasn't it like the number one upset line-wise in the history of college football?
Yes, and that was 4 years ago. And Harbaugh turned a 1-11 team into a national title contender last year, and they've obviously carried that into this year, and then with the sanctions that came down on USC, they went from a perennial Pac-10 powerhouse and a perennial national title contender to a team that's only won 8 or 9 games over the last couple of years. It looks like they're back. It looks like they're weathering that storm. But it just boggles my mind that Stanford is over a touchdown favorite on the road against USC when, from 2002 to 2009, they were never less than a double-digit underdog. It's just one of those crazy things.
Unbelievable. And the thing is, you know, last year, as good as Stanford was, it was a 37-35 game in this series in Palo Alto. And, you know, Stanford needed a field goal to win it, and they got it. What's interesting is USC now, they're running the ball a little bit here with Curtis McNeil and Mark Tyler, who looked healthy enough last week, and I'm assuming he'll be back in there again and feeling good. And if they can run the ball, I mean, Stanford, this is the 18th ranked total defense in the country. They're fourth in scoring defense, third in rush defense. And if somehow USC can muster up a run game, and then that frees up Woods and Marquise Lee, who's now a legitimate second option. Barkley's been playing better. Like, I give them a pretty good chance in this game, even though Stanford's coming off of not even needing Andrew Luck against a pretty good Washington team. They didn't even need Andrew Luck to be in the game. They could have lined anybody up at quarterback and run it for 446 yards, put up 65 points. They'll need Andrew Luck this week. I really obviously believe that. But will USC be able to take advantage and galvanize the Coliseum again and get that home field advantage working and take last year's close game and turn it into a win? Because to me, this is USC's Super Bowl game this year. This and the Oregon game are what is making it worth this season for USC.
Yeah, and USC has the added benefit, as much as this is like a Super Bowl for them, they have the added benefit of having nothing to lose.
Right.
I mean, there's no pressure on them. If they lose, so what? We didn't have anything anyway. You know, in college football, every loss is crippling, but even if USC wins out and finishes with the best record in the Pac-12 South, they don't get to go to the Pac-12 Championship, so they have nothing to lose here. So that's a dangerous proposition that Stanford has everything to lose, USC has nothing to lose. And then let's talk about Clemson at Georgia Tech. Now we've completely fallen out of love with Georgia Tech, especially you. You've had them as their disappointments as your surprise of the week two straight weeks, but I'm actually concerned for Clemson this week. Do you share that sentiment?
Well, it depends. It all depends on what Georgia Tech team shows up, because you certainly think, look, if they're going to save their season at home, they better do it this week. I mean, Georgia Tech, when they're rolling, here's where I think you're right, because this Georgia Tech team, with what it does offensively, is the perfect poison for what Clemson likes to do on offense, because what Georgia Tech does offensively is keeps the opposing offense off the field when they're running the ball the way that they should be. Here's my issue, though. Tevin Washington, the quarterback that I talk about seemingly on a weekly basis for Georgia Tech, has lost his ability to throw at all. And as good as that triple option can be, if he's going to go, let me read you the last 3 weeks. 6 for 19, 2 for 8, and 6 for 12 passing with no touchdowns in the last 3 games and 4 interceptions. As good as that running game can be, there's no way you keep a defense honest if you're doing that. Now, I don't know what happened. I'm worried that all of the critics that talk about getting game film, and if one defense can expose it on film, then similar defenses in a conference like the ACC with similar personnel can recreate it. And it seems like, unfortunately, that's what's happened the last 3 weeks, starting even with that Maryland game that they won. I hope that's not true, because I've defended Paul Johnson and that offense a lot, but will they be able to see Clemson, who has better personnel than these last 3 teams, even on defense, will they be able to get back to what they do philosophically?
2 things I like about Georgia Tech. Despite how terribly their offense has all of a sudden played, like we've said, they've gone from one of the absolute best in the nation to being completely solved. The defense has played great. Mm-hmm. The defense has really played great over the last few weeks. And when you consider how poor the offense has been, the opposing teams have had plenty of opportunities. They've kept those games close. against Miami, against Maryland, against Virginia. Not huge offenses by any stretch, but decent offenses. Nothing that comes close to Clemson, but I like the way Georgia Tech's defense is playing. But the other thing I like, as much as Georgia Tech may very well be quote-unquote solved, Virginia has had a very solid defense this year, and we both kind of knew that Miami game was going to be trouble for Georgia Tech, because they're built, they're a fast defense, if nothing else. They stymied Ohio State, and they stymied Georgia Tech. That was a bad matchup for Georgia Tech. Clemson is giving up 169 rushing yards a game. They're not a good rushing defense this year. And overall on defense, they gave up 45 points to Maryland and 38 points to UNC. Now, that doesn't matter when you're scoring into the high 50s, of course, and this offense looks unstoppable. But if you keep that offense off the field and you get this offense rolling again against a bad rushing attack,
that's the key, yeah.
I think there's a good reason why Georgia Tech is only a four-point underdog here. I really am a bit concerned for Clemson. Georgia Tech has won four of the last five games against Clemson. It's a tricky game.
There's no question that if they can get that triple option rolling, and like you said, if they can take advantage of that almost 170 yards a game that Clemson's giving up, keeping Taj Boyd off the field and out of rhythm, because this is a rhythm offense that's been in rhythm all season, but when they're not able to get on the field, or even if they get on the field and are down a couple of scores and are having to force things, I mean, you're right, and you know, this is a beat up team a little bit, because Dwayne Allen, the tight end, he's hurt. Andre Ellington, they may play, but I'm not sure if either one of them are healthy or ready to go. Taj Boyd's numbers have been off the charts. It's unbelievable.
I want to ask you this, because you know, we had a bit of a Heisman segment. I actually brought Taj Boyd up then when he was a little bit more of a sleeper. So, you know, props to us for seeing some of these sleeper guys before the nation got on board. But where is the Taj Boyd for Heisman movement? Where is it? I'm not saying that. I understand that this is a sick quarterback year. I mean, there are so many guys, and I'm not saying he deserves it over a guy like Andrew Luck. And the one issue in his game, the only issue in his game really, is that he has a 61.9% completion rate as opposed to the 70% plus that Luck has and Moore has and Griffin III has. But he's seventh in the nation in passing yards with just under 2,400. He's tied for first in the nation with 24 touchdowns. He's only thrown three interceptions. And I just talked about Clemson's poor defense. This is Clemson's offense. Now, Sammy Watkins, of course, is a big part of that, too. But I'm saying they need him to be doing this every week. No disrespect to Andrew Luck, because he's the best player in college football. There's no questioning that. But like you just said, if you or I would have lined up under center last week, we would have beaten number 20 Washington, because we would have handed the ball off and they would have rushed the ball for 446 yards. Maybe without the threat of passing, they only rushed for 390 yards. But the point being, Stanford can beat you in other ways. They've got a top five defense. They've got a strong offensive line, a strong running game. Taj Boyd is this Clemson team. They're undefeated. And Clemson has a history and a reputation of always being that team that screws up. And you don't see it any more than that against Florida State, when Taj Boyd was kind of falling over himself. And one of those three interceptions, he just throws the ball up in the air and Florida State picks it off and runs it in for six. And that looked like, oh boy, here goes Clemson again. But there has been no, oh boy, there goes Clemson again, because of him. Yeah. He's turned this team into a very legitimate threat to run the table, a national title threat. I'm not saying he should win the Heisman. I'm just saying, am I nuts to think that there should be a lot more noise for this guy?
Well, for the first time today, I've started to hear it, actually. It's like it finally is coming, because they're ranked where they are. And I actually would argue that Oklahoma and Wisconsin losing helped his Heisman campaign.
Oh, yeah, because Landry Jones out and Russell Wilson out.
It finally got them out and those teams out, and Clemson replaces them in the rankings, and he replaces them in the minds of Heisman voters. The thing is, I heard a comparison today that I kind of like, that this Clemson team is almost like a poor man's, and I don't mean poor man's in terms of ability, but poor man's in terms of the notoriety they're getting, a poor man's version of last year's Auburn team. The Auburn team last year was not, they didn't have a great defense coming in. Statistically, that they weren't that good of a defense. They had a quarterback that came on the scene like fire, but only in like a year. No one knew who he was before that. And they had some skill position players that made their names also. Taj Boyd isn't necessarily Cam Newton. I'm not going to compare him to Cam Newton.
Of course not.
But he is starting to put up the kind of numbers that if you really want to look deep into the Heisman race, why isn't Taj Boyd? I mean, these numbers are good for Andrew Luck. These numbers are good for Kellen Moore. These numbers are great for any quarterback. And with that team undefeated and ranked where they are, at some point he has to not only be in the conversation, but like towards the top of it.
Yeah, because he's done it against tougher opponents to this point. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you have heard some of those things today. I was taking a sabbatical from some of the media after the crazy weekend, so yeah. I'm glad it's getting out there somewhere and here running the option. Yeah. Slowly but surely, but exactly, I don't want him to be mentioned as a dark horse. I want him mentioned in the top three, yeah. Top five. I think he deserves it. He deserves to be in there with the Trent Richardson and Andrew Luck conversation, in my opinion, yeah. At least until they lose a game.
The one takeaway I'll say with both of these teams, Stanford and Clemson, and getting back to Boise State, who's sitting pretty at number four right now, and as of this moment, they're an Oklahoma State loss away from getting themselves really into the discussion. But Clemson and Stanford, with these high-profile road tests, do you think that they both pass Boise State, who's idle this week, not playing? Some people would say Boise State's idle every week, but they really are idle this week. And would you think that Stanford and Clemson can jump them both and get into that 4 and 5 spot themselves?
I think Stanford would. I think Clemson wouldn't, mm-hmm. because of Georgia Tech's falling off the map in the last couple weeks. And it's a shame for Clemson, yeah. because this game's going to play out the same way either way. But I don't know that Georgia Tech this year is enough to jump that high. They'd have to jump a couple. I mean, although then again, you know, Clemson's number 5, yep. and Stanford's number 6. So I'm saying I could see Stanford jumping from 6 to 4, and I see Clemson staying put or dropping a spot. So
that's what makes it so
I don't know. It is very
interesting. I looked at the BCS rankings this week, and then I started thinking about what we're going to have this next Monday, and I just couldn't figure out if the voters will allow them to both, because the voters still like Boise State enough, but will the computers and the voters allow both those teams to jump over Boise?
If we know anything, we know that history tells us that the polls and the coaches and everybody have no problem jumping Boise State when they don't do anything wrong. Yeah. So whether it's this week or in the weeks to come, we'll find out.
Absolutely.
But let's wrap these two games up because we've got a lot more games to talk about. But just for this week, since we're talking about so many games, such a big week in college football, I just kind of want to get a rating scale, an upset rating scale, and we'll see, you know, if we match up here. 1 to 10, 1 being not much of an upset chance at all, 10 being it's going to happen, this upset's going down. How much of an upset threat do you consider USC over Stanford?
For me, you know, and maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, I don't know, but I just really like what I've seen from USC, and I don't know that Stanford got the kind of test last week against Washington that they – it's kind of almost symbolic or similar to Wisconsin going to Michigan State. I don't think they were tested nearly to the degree they needed to be going into that game, and they still
played
well.
And the Nebraska game was almost their
Washington
game.
So I almost see it like that. I'm going to say a 7. I think if USC can get a ground game going, and if they can somehow stop the run, if they can do whatever it takes to stop the run and make Andrew Luck pass on third down, third and long, things like that, that maybe Monty Kiffin has the answer to at least dial up enough to get into a shootout, and they go into a similar 37-35 game, and maybe they're on the field goal winning end of it.
See, I have it as a 4. Right. I think Stanford's going to go in and beat USC, but it is scary, the parallels. Because all week I have been writing articles about the Stanford-USC game, and I keep talking about how dominant Stanford has been. You talked about 10 straight 25-plus point wins, and we were saying all the same things about Wisconsin. They were untested, and then they're going out against a big road team. But I think the difference is Stanford, to me, personnel-wise, putting aside those numbers, because you could easily say, you know, that's all depends on your opponents, and because Stanford's played weak opponents, you know, well, we don't actually think they have, say, the 17th best rushing attack in the nation. But you've got two of the best quarterbacks in the nation, Stanford's is better.
Yep.
Two good, great offensive lines, Stanford's is better. Defense, Stanford's is better. And offense, running game, Stanford's is better. I just like Stanford better at every position, despite the fact that I don't think there's a huge discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Stanford's slightly better at every position, and it's a veteran-led team, and they're comfortable. They've won in the Coliseum before, so there's enough here that I don't think Stanford's going to fall into the same trap. But hey, last week I didn't give Michigan State much of a chance either. So we'll see. But I have that as a four. And what about Clemson, Georgia
Tech?
Well,
for me, this is a four. And the only reason I say it is I don't think Clemson has enough statement games left on their schedule that they're going to overlook this one. I think they circled it at the beginning of the year. Like you said, they have a history of losing to this team. I just don't see Clemson, and I think Clemson's a better football team. I like Clemson's personnel. I love where Dabo Swinney's at with this team. And I just think that they are looking at what they have left. And they're like, it's this game, it's South Carolina, and it's the ACC title game. If we think we're the kind of team that we are, we're going to go on the road and make this one go away pretty quick.
Yeah, I got this one as a seven. I guess we're just going back and forth. Like I talked about, I think Georgia Tech has a really good shot in this one, and I think you're spot on that they're obviously not going to overlook this game, and they know that it's a scary game. But the fact that Georgia Tech has been down the last three games concerns me, because it's human nature. It's not a matter of preparation. I don't doubt that Clemson's going to be prepared. I don't doubt they're the more talented team, but it's human nature to look at this Georgia Tech team and say, this machine is out of gas, yeah, and we're going to go in and beat them.
Yeah.
And if Clemson goes in a little overconfident and Georgia Tech all of a sudden becomes the Georgia Tech from a month ago,
yeah,
it's going to be the game we thought it was going to be
right
a month ago. Yeah. And I think Georgia Tech is going to do that. Yeah. But the groundwork has clearly been laid out to beat this team. Right. So if Clemson plays the role,
I want to like Georgia Tech. I can't like a quarterback that's not even completing 50% of his passes.
No,
it's just too hard to go with that.
Please don't read me those stats again. I wouldn't keep it a seven.
Right.
So of course, count on the media. Not that we're the media in the grand scheme of the word, but count on the media to overlook Kansas State. They are finally favored in a game. They're favored by 10 points against Kansas, and they destroy Kansas. Kansas didn't belong on the same field. What do you mean they're only a 10-point favorite against Kansas? It was completely ridiculous. This team is undefeated. They finally got into the top 10 in the BCS. They're now at number 8. And needless to say, if they beat Oklahoma, how many of these teams do they jump? Who do they jump? Clemson, Stanford, Boise State. Where do they get into that conversation? And Oklahoma, of course, coming off of this huge loss. When you go to your locker room and you say, hey, guys, you know, I mean, I know we were talking national championship. I know things were looking pretty good there. I know we were thinking Oklahoma State at the end of the year. We need to go out there. We need to beat these Wildcats. We need to keep our Big 12 title hopes alive.
Great speech. the issue is that Bob Stoops, who I'll just talk very briefly about, Skip Bayless is a personality on ESPN that a lot of people know about, because this guy has been accused and often does just stir the pot. Some people think it's for ratings, whatever it is, but he's very close to the Oklahoma program, grew up an Oklahoma fan, etc. And he came out pretty strongly this week with a fire Bob Stoops at Oklahoma slogan.
Now, hearing the speech you just heard me give, right, do you think I could get that job?
I think that based on what Skip Bayless said, he'd hire you in a second. Because he called Bob Stoops the best recruiter in the country and the worst motivator in the country. And he took the last 10 years and really dove in deep. Now, I'm not going to even approach touching the idea of firing Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. But what his conviction was all about is the idea that Bob Stoops takes teams that should win national championships and finds ways to lose them in different areas.
Couldn't you have said the same thing about Pete Carroll?
Definitely. In fact, that's the comparison.
Did he make that comparison?
It's a longer tenured version of Pete Carroll. Now, I would say that the comparison he was really getting at, he didn't make this one either, but it almost sounded like what he was saying is that he's a rich man's version of Frank Beamer. That instead of getting you 10 or 11 wins every year and a BCS Orange Bowl berth every year, that he gets you 12 and maybe a national championship appearance and then a loss, or a Big 12 title game win and then a Fiesta Bowl loss to West Virginia. You know, you can go down the list and you can see where Skip Bayless is coming from if you believe that the expectation
level... Hey, they handled their business in that Connecticut game last year, okay, buddy? You watch it.
If you believe what ESPN believes, which is they did a best program of all time top 25 list a couple years ago, I think, and Oklahoma ranked number one. The number one football program of all time. The most consistent program in the history of college football. If you believe that's true, then maybe Skip Bayless has a point. Maybe 10 years, 11 years since they've won their last national title is not good enough. But Bob Stoops, as a coach and what he's done and his track record, maybe he doesn't motivate his team. Maybe they weren't ready to practice and prepare for Texas Tech. But it's hard to argue that he needs to be let go at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can certainly argue bringing in a new coach to get you to the next level. Yeah. But the next level is perfection.
Right.
I mean, that's the only place you can go.
Like you said, the frustration with Pete Carroll. Yeah, it was frustration. But would you, in your right mind, want to fire him if he was in the heyday? And
no, that's what I'm saying. Everybody loved Pete Carroll. Right. Or certainly everybody at USC did. Everybody outside of USC hated Pete Carroll because he was a perennial winner. So, yeah, Skip Bayless, I hate Skip Bayless with a passion, which is what he wants me to do, you know, but of course I don't actually watch his show, but he's not the only one talking about that because, you know, at the end of the day, I've always said this about coaches, you know, when you look at a team on paper, you look at what they are, and if on the field they play better, that's a testament to good coaching, and if on the field they play worse, that's a testament to bad coaching. Well, when you're on paper, you're supposed to be perfect. Doesn't leave a whole lot of room for error, but by the logic I've always held coaches to, maybe it is bad coaching. I don't know.
It's really tricky because I think you run a huge risk if you fire a guy like
Bob Stoops. Yeah, the question is, I would ask Skip Bayless, okay, you want to fire Bob Stoops, that's fine. Who are you going to bring in that's going to give you the championship every other year that you're looking for? Who is that guy?
Yeah, his argument was, somebody said Les Miles, and he said, I'd trade places with and get Les Miles in a heartbeat. Fine, but I think you really underestimate what a guy like Bob Stoops brings to the table in comparison to Les Miles, even with Les Miles doing what he's doing.
Les Miles has a couple of tough losses under his belt, too.
Yeah,
so
and some boneheaded decisions.
Interesting, yeah, but
I will say this, getting back to Kansas State.
Yeah, let's talk about this game. Hey, look what we did. I said that we overlook them, and then we say, hey, look, they're playing Oklahoma. Let's talk about Oklahoma. Forget Kansas State. This team, what are they going to have to do? And now if they beat Oklahoma, everybody will say, oh, well, Texas Tech did too. Let's just talk about someone else.
Yeah, no, they can't buy a break. You know, here's what I'll say about Kansas State.
All right.
If you're a Wildcat fan, this is the best year I can remember in a while to be in the Big 12. Because if you believe in your team and they go undefeated, I'm going to be on board as saying put them in the national championship because they got to go through Oklahoma State.
Yeah,
Oklahoma.
We said that last week. Yeah. Why on earth don't they have the same right that Oklahoma State and Oklahoma did that if they won out in the Big 12 that they got to go? Why wouldn't they?
You've been disrespected the entire season, but you're in the right conference. I mean, maybe if you were in the SEC, it'd be better, but this is the second best conference to be in.
And this next month of football, there's nothing left to disrespect if they did find a way to win through it.
We know they've beaten Baylor. We know they've beaten Miami. We know they've beaten Texas Tech. But this is a whole nother monster that they're about to play, and an angry monster at that. So will Kansas State be able to, at home, get the crowd continued? You know, that crowd has been electric for them recently. But will they be able to take an entirely different philosophy offensively than what Texas Tech has? I don't even know if watching the game film is going to help Kansas State at all. You want to watch it, but there's no Seth Dagey throwing for 440 yards and four touchdowns for them.
No, that's my note on this game. Kansas State simply doesn't pass the ball well enough.
Right.
And they do an excellent job of running the football, but they haven't played a defense like Oklahoma's yet. And from an X's and O's perspective, I have a ton of respect for Kansas State. And I think they're going to beat one of these big teams. I'm not sure which one it's going to be. Maybe it'll be Texas A&M. I could see them beating Oklahoma State, you know, because that team doesn't have a great defense. I could see them running the offense they like to run against a team like Oklahoma State. Against Oklahoma, I don't see it. But you have one of two things here in Oklahoma. You have an angry monster or a depressed monster. And that's the question. Because, like I said, a Big 12 title, and then we go to the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, but the amazing
and
thing
then,
is he does it every year. Like, historic, you would think they would give up on the season, but every year they lose a stupid game.
So,
and then they just go on to the Fiesta Bowl and have a great time
in
Arizona.
Right. So historically, there's no reason to believe that all of a sudden they're just going to fall apart.
Right.
And yeah, I don't think they will, but
I mean, yeah, it's one of those games where Colin Klein, you know, he's done a great job managing what Kansas State likes to do. And I really like Bill Snyder. He's one of my favorite coaches.
He's amazing.
I mean, he's done nothing but great things with a program that it's in Manhattan, Kansas. It's a nice program, but he is really the reason that anybody has heard of K-State. And Colin Klein, he's a decent passer, great rusher, 14 rushing touchdowns, but it plays right into the strength, like you said, yeah, right into the teeth of the Oklahoma defense, who is pretty stout against the run. I just don't know if what they do matchup-wise is going to have any chance this week.
I'd give this one a 1 on a neutral field.
I'll give it a 2.
I give it a 3 simply because, like I said, history tells us that Oklahoma just keeps on rolling, but there's something magical about this Kansas State team, and I know that sounds lame, but it's just been the case this year. They've won most of their games in outright upset fashion this year, and they're at home, and that place is going to be buzzing, and, you know, I'll tell you why I give it a 3, because I would have given Texas Tech a -1. So, I mean, you know, obviously Oklahoma can be beat, so.
No, they can. And you know, the truth is, I mean, if Oklahoma plays the way, at least on defense, that they did last week, even against the run, or if they play the way on offense at times with Landry Jones out of sync. Now, he still had a great game statistically, but Landry Jones missed a lot of throws. Kansas State has played some strong defense. They're solid against the run. They've been decent against the pass. I mean, you want to make a case that they play so hard that they play above their personnel level, but if the personnel takes over, even on the road, Oklahoma's just going to get back to doing what they did.
Yeah, 3 is just being generous. I just felt bad that we weren't given much respect, so.
Yeah.
But hey, if they win this game, we'll find room for them in the next podcast. Oh, yeah. Promise. No takesy backsies on that one. So you know, another game that another same spread, actually. Kansas State is a 14-point underdog at home. Oklahoma State is a 14-point favorite at home against Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a team that Oklahoma State has had a ton of success against in recent years. And yeah, I don't love trends in college football because teams change so much, but they're 9-1 in their last 10 games against Baylor. And they have 5 straight wins against Baylor with point discrepancies of 27 points or more. So Baylor hasn't kept it within 4 touchdowns in the last 5 years. But that's then. Now is Robert Griffin III. Is there any chance that Robert Griffin III I'm going to make Texas Tech a verb. Is there any chance that Robert Griffin III techs Oklahoma State this week?
Well, I will say that he has shown the ability to throw the ball deep, which, you know, that's the amazing thing about Robert Griffin III's stats, is that he doesn't just throw those dink-dunk passes that get your completion percentage into the 70 range for so many guys. He actually goes deep and is willing to take shots and has been so accurate throughout the season. There's no simple way around the fact that Baylor's going to have to outscore Oklahoma State, because if you look at these two defenses, and you and I have talked at length about the Oklahoma State defense, we didn't like it coming into the season, and there's actually a reason we didn't like it, and it's proven statistically to be that, because Oklahoma State is 103rd nationally in total defense, but the thing we didn't maybe expect is they lead the country in turnover margin, so they're the most bend-but-don't-break defense I've ever seen, really.
Crazy.
All they do is give up yards and then take the ball away.
Yeah.
And then they give it to their offense, and when you give it to that offense, it's a nightmare. And I think Baylor does have the ability to protect the ball better than Oklahoma State has seen to this point, even though they've played some good offenses. Robert Griffin has turned it over, but not nearly to the degree that some of these other teams have. And I think he's capable of protecting it, but they're going to have to go score for score, and it's going to have to get into, I honestly, like the 50s for them to have a chance. Can they do it? Can they win a 52-50 game? I think maybe they can, but I'm not sold on this one. You know, Oklahoma State, as far as motivation, this is the highest ranked team that will be playing this weekend, and that's never happened in the history of Oklahoma State. They've never taken the field in a weekend of college football and been the highest ranked team to play, and that's because the two SEC teams have the bye, but the stakes are so incredibly high for this team, and they are rolling, and with those turnovers, if they get them, I just feel like Oklahoma State's going to have the answer.
Yeah, I mean, as do I, obviously, but you know, that could have a negative effect, too. I mean, having that much pressure on you, you know, Oklahoma State wasn't really flying under the radar, per se. They're certainly one of the nation's top teams, but with Oklahoma being the team in Oklahoma, they were always just kind of, you know, hey, we'll get them at the end of the year, we'll prove it on the football field. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, they're the team to beat. And they're going to go into that game, and they very well might be favored now, because, you know, they're the team now, so... it is going to be interesting to see how they handle it. They probably will survive Baylor this week. And, you know, the thing is, as bad as Oklahoma State's defense has been, not only turnovers, but they do just come up with a timely stop here and there. It is a very strange dynamic. But, you know, you talk about how Robert Griffin turns the ball over. You know, it's generally with fumbles because he doesn't throw interceptions. No. And Oklahoma State's not great at getting pressure on the quarterback by any stretch. So, I mean, if you give this guy time...
He's not going to turn it over. Like, the guy, he's thrown two picks. The guy doesn't turn the ball over. It's one of those things where that's your saving grace if you're a Baylor fan.
I'll give this one a Robert Griffin the 3. I'll give it a 3.
I'll give it a look into the future, Robert Griffin the 4th.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, you know, like you said, it's gonna have to be one of those crazy offensive games, and it very well could be. It should be a blast. I mean, so, you know, that's the thing. Like you could say all you want about good games, but when you just talk about fun games to watch, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Stanford, USC should just be fun games to watch this week.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then you know, we have to talk about it, even though they're not in this conversation, because they both have a loss. But Michigan State and Nebraska are playing for the controlling stake of the Big Ten Legends division. Man. And Michigan State, what a story. They're just world beaters.
And the thing with this game, and I think Bo Pelini is hoping that this plays out, I don't know if it will, but if Mark D'Antonio was willing to call the Michigan win a program win, like a season almost, a season win, then you get what happened last week, and then you're in complete euphoria, the entire fan base on cloud nine. Is there a chance that 2 weeks in a row of some of the best wins in the last 10 years for your program, that you're so high that you hit a really big wall in Nebraska this week?
1,000,000% yes. Yeah. I'm 100% convinced Nebraska's going to win this game. I think Michigan State's the better team. I hate Nebraska's defense. Mm-hmm. They had a good game against Minnesota. Hooray. I mean, Minnesota is terrible, but I don't like Nebraska's defense. But you hit it on the head. Can you imagine what it feels like to be a Michigan State Spartan right now for what you've accomplished over the last few weeks? I mean, to just be a kid on that campus right now. I mean... Cloud nine, this team is incredible, and they deserve all the hype and all the adoration they've received. How do you do it 3 straight weeks? I mean, you have to be inhuman. And now on the road, you know, to have this euphoria, and then a Hail Mary play, and the building is going to explode in East Lansing, you know, and now you're on the road, and you're getting booed, and it's like, what's going on? I mean, just the emotions, I couldn't pretend to know what it would be like, and I just, it plays right into Nebraska's hands.
And the thing, and Nebraska is looking, and they're thinking, Michigan State probably thinks that they're not only in control of the Legends division, but the Big Ten in general with that win. What they don't realize is, and Nebraska knows this, we can take control of that division this week. And if Michigan State doesn't understand what kind of environment they're going into, they're going to lose control and not even get close to that title game because of this. So you're right. I mean, if you look at it, Michigan State's got a great rush defense, statistically the second best in the country.
And that's what Nebraska needs to do.
But they gave up 220 yards on the ground against Wisconsin. So they started to show it last week. And, you know, with what Nebraska likes to do with Rex Burkhead and Taylor Martinez running the ball, I think they looked at that game film and they were like, we're going to catch these guys sleeping and we're going to run it right down their throat. So I'm kind of with you. I'm leaning towards this being a Nebraska win, much less an upset, you know?
And, you know, I'm actually kind of rooting for Michigan State because, first of all, if they won those 3 straight games, I mean, I want to start putting them in this conversation for the national title, even though I know we're not going to put them in there over an undefeated Stanford or something. But, man, oh, man, with those 3 games. But more the bigger reason, if they win the Legends and Wisconsin goes on to win the Leaders and we could see a rematch of that in the back Big Ten title, that would be incredible. So just as a fan of college football, I'm rooting for Michigan State. But I think Nebraska wins here. And then, yeah, Nebraska goes and probably gets beat by 30 again to Wisconsin. Most likely, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's they get some players back. William Golston comes back, so you hope maybe that helps. But Michigan State's got their work cut out for them.
So, you know, we said after we covered all these huge games this weekend, if we had a little bit of time, we might talk about the Missouri to the SEC rumors. You know, we don't have enough time. We've covered enough at this point. We need to get into our quick hits. And, of course, our quick hits are going to be a little different this week. We always talk about our biggest surprise, which will be the same. But then we talk about upset alert and game we're looking forward to. This week it'll be a little different because those five games certainly cover both upset alerts and games we're looking forward to. So we'll go a little off the map with those, some of the ones that might get overlooked with all this great college football action. But let's start with our biggest surprise of the week. What do you got for me?
Well, for me, it's getting back to Wisconsin, and they destroyed Nebraska 48-17 when they played, and then they lose to Michigan State on a Hail Mary, and yet in this week's BCS standings, the Badgers are 15th and the Huskers are 14th. And to me, that speaks to just what the feeling is in the computer and even the polls about Wisconsin's schedule to that point, to allow Nebraska to pass them despite the beating that they got from the Badgers.
And what's so much better about Nebraska?
That's what
schedule?
I don't get. I don't know.
They had the win over Ohio State.
Right.
So, I mean, if Wisconsin beats Ohio State this week, maybe they re-jump them.
Somehow,
but,
like a win over Washington in the non-conference, whatever it is.
I guess that's true. I did forget about the Washington game, so that's a good one too. But yeah, but Wisconsin was top five in offense and defense, yeah, and beating teams by an average of 40 points a game, and they lose a really good game on a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
It's not like they got beat down by Michigan State, and if that one goes to overtime, my money's on Wisconsin. But yeah, they all of a sudden, all the way down to 15, and Nebraska ahead of them. That is interesting.
How about you?
That is a surprise. You know what else is a surprise? You know, Dan Guerrero, my biggest surprise was after the UCLA-Arizona game, Dan Guerrero comes out and says, Rick Neuheisel is my coach. And, you know, I know we spend a lot of time giving Rick Neuheisel and UCLA crap on this show. But this one really was bizarre to me, okay? Because just a week ago, a week before this game, Dan Guerrero said that Rick Neuheisel was day-to-day. And he said, basically, we're all day-to-day in this business.
Yeah.
You know, that's how he kind of covered it up. Now, day-to-day, when an employer says that you're day-to-day, that means, to me, that if you screw up really bad, you're going to lose your job. Because we are taking it on a day-to-day basis. Today, I like you. Today, I like you. Today, I like you. Today, I don't like you. So I'm going to let you go. Today is that day today. So UCLA going up against an Arizona team that has lost 10 straight games to BCS opponents, that has just lost to Oregon State and just fired their coach. UCLA is going up against this Arizona team and they put up over 40 points in the first half. They just weren't prepared for the game. They weren't prepared for the game. They weren't up for the game. They never had a prayer in the game. They didn't belong on the same field as a bad, bad Arizona Wildcats team. And I'm less concerned with how many points they gave up, more concerned with the fact they didn't score anything on a really bad Arizona defense. They didn't stop the run against a really bad Arizona rushing attack. Dan Guerrero, after that game, says, Rick Neuheisel's my coach. Rick Neuheisel is my coach through the end of the year. At the end of the year, we'll reevaluate things and we'll see where it's at. That's fine to me. You know, I respected that Arizona fired Stoops and that they got a head start on the coaching search, but I also respect the program saying, I don't want the distraction, I want to have my coach throughout the year. But if that's how he felt, why even make the day-to-day statement?
Yeah.
I thought Rick Neuheisel's head was going to be on a platter Friday, and now all of a sudden he gets a ringing endorsement.
I mean, on a Thursday night national television game, not only do you get blown out of the water, but you are involved in an embarrassing on-field altercation that started, in fairness to both teams, with a crazy fan dressed in a ref suit that goes out onto the field and does his strip routine or whatever it was. But the truth is, from that point forward, the game was an embarrassment in every way imaginable. And if you see Rick Neuheisel's coaching show, which I had the unfortunate pleasure to watch, you could see the pain in his eyes, bloodshot eyes. The words still came out in typical optimistic fashion, but I don't see anything from Rick Neuheisel right now that makes me think that he's going to get this ship righted and that he has any prayer to keep his job after the season.
I was genuinely shocked that Guerrero came out and endorsed him. It just didn't make any sense to me after saying he was day-to-day. Why say that in the first place? And then he was saying that he wanted to come out and say this because he didn't want a distraction for the program. So the distraction for the program was fine a week ago?
Yeah. Doesn't make sense. And he, by the way, he's on the hot seat too.
I mean, I would consider whoever gets to make that call should have axed them both after the Arizona game and said, you're right, you are all day to day. So let's talk about upset alerts outside of those, you know, big games that we were talking about. Penn State is quietly 7-1. This is the quietest and perhaps most unspectacular 7-1 team I've seen in a long time in a major conference. I mean, this is a Big Ten team that's just going about their business. They're only beating teams by a little bit, but they're 7-1. And congratulations, of course, are due to Joe Pa, who tied the record for most wins all time among Division I coaches, and he'll certainly probably surpass that this year. They're going up against Illinois this week, and they're at home, and Illinois has not looked sharp at all, but I think they need to be careful because they've played so many of these games close, and Illinois has some good games left in them. I don't think that they're completely done. They were probably always playing over their head when they got off that undefeated start, but they're still a good team. I think these are two evenly matched teams, and the Vegas has it as Penn State as a 5-point favorite. I think it'll be a field goal type of game, and it might go Illinois' way.
Yeah, I mean, Penn State, their only loss is to Alabama. There's nothing to dislike about that.
And when you look at the final score,
yeah,
you know,
wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was the best game. It was the quote-unquote toughest game Alabama played, despite the fact that it was never really in doubt when you were watching
it. And yet, like you said, those wins against Indiana and Temple, they just didn't give you any reason to feel like this team is the kind of 7-1 team that, with that respectable loss to Alabama, we maybe would put them into the category of. They look like a team that they don't make a whole lot of mistakes, but they're not that explosive. They play the same type of defense and offense that we're used to seeing, but I think it's to a lesser standard than Penn State is usually.
And their defense is fifth in the nation in scoring defense.
Yeah.
Now, granted, again, that has a lot to do with the opponents they faced, but yeah, you'd think a 7-1 Joe Pa coach team that's only loss was to probably the best team in the country would be getting some sort of conversation, but they're not.
They don't pass our eye test, and I don't think they pass a lot of people's
eye test.
I can't apologize for it because it's just how we feel.
Right, and I mean, beating Illinois isn't going to get them there either.
Right.
So they're going to have to win some of these big games down the stretch, but they might lose this one.
Yeah, well, for me, it's I look at South Carolina still carrying a top 15 ranking. Because they do only have one loss as well. They're going into Tennessee. Now, Tennessee hasn't done anything special this year at all. And some people may think that I'm choosing this as an upset alert because of what Tennessee was able to do for a half against Alabama last week. And to a certain extent, I did like what I saw from them. I think that Derek Dooley is so desperate to still get signature wins and get this program started under his reign that South Carolina is a little bit, they're kind of ripe for the picking this week with Marcus Lattimore down. And I don't love the body language on this team. I think they're going to try to go out there and play the best they can with him on the sideline, but it kind of seems like a defeated team to me. They still have an amazing front seven that's going to put a lot of pressure on a really young quarterback in Matt Sims for Tennessee. But for some reason, this game, it's like a 4-point spread, and it reads to me as a game that Tennessee can win at home.
Yeah, Clemson sure hopes you're wrong, but there's no question. I mean, this South Carolina team, we've probably spent more time on them than any other team in the nation, in large part because we thought they were at that national championship level, and so did they. And that's obviously out of the question at this point. And their grip on the SEC East is starting to falter too, you know, because Georgia's looking good, and they the injury to Marcus Lattimore, I mean, that's the heart and soul of your offense. But you come into the year with the leaders of your offense, other than Alshon Jeffrey, of course, being Stephen Garcia and Marcus Lattimore, and now they're both gone. So what is the identity of this team? If Tennessee gets out to an early lead and that crowd gets bumping, yeah, that I wouldn't even really consider that much of an upset, even though it certainly would be on paper.
Definitely, yeah, and you know, again, it's nothing that Spurrier can control in many ways, but with Connor Shaw at quarterback, he's got to do the best he can to get him to get Alshon Jeffrey involved, or else the rest of the season's going to be long.
Definitely, and what are you looking forward to?
Well, for me, this game, you know, it's known as the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. I think it's a pretty awesome name for a game played in Jacksonville every year. And this series between Georgia and Florida this week kind of means a lot all of a sudden in the SEC East. If you're a Boise State fan, and this is a wild scenario I'll throw out for Boise State, but if you're a Boise State fan and you're looking, how can we get into the national title realistically? We outlined one theory earlier. The other one maybe is that Georgia catches fire, mm-hmm. like they have started to a little bit. That they are winning in the SEC East to such a high degree and feeling so good week in and week out that in a one-game playoff scenario in an SEC title game, they find the magic to knock off the SEC West title. I know this is going to sound crazy. If they do it, and somehow Georgia won the SEC, which they're actually in a position to be in that game to do, then all of a sudden Boise State has the win that they never dreamed they'd have, you know, at the beginning of the season.
And the door would be open because now you're not going to send a 2 or 3 loss Georgia team,
right.
And you might have trouble sending a team that lost the SEC championship.
Yeah.
I mean, last week you were saying Oklahoma had set a precedent, but there might even be 2 spots open.
Right.
They might eliminate Alabama and LSU with that win, so it would be a dream scenario.
It starts this week for Georgia, and Mark Richt, he's got to win this game because Florida has owned this series under his reign. They've won 8 of the last 10, and the truth is it's now or never for Georgia in this series because when are you going to get Florida in a more kind of desperate,
vulnerable
position than now? I mean, John Brantley, they say, is coming back. I say the word desperate because I almost think Will Muschamp, I think they're going to put him out there, but I'm not even convinced he's ready to come back.
No.
And Muschamp, I don't know if he's playing a game with the media or with Mark Richt, but it looks like he could play this week. I'm just looking at Georgia, and they're still 6th in total defense in the country. There's a lot to like about this team on paper, as we said at the beginning of the season. If they put it together and Aaron Murray doesn't turn the ball over like he did last year in this game, I like Georgia to finally get the job done in this series and start to turn a season around.
Yeah, and they're relatively healthy. I mean, everybody's beat up in the SEC, but you know, you've still got Aaron Murray, and quarterbacks are dropping like flies in the SEC. You know, you beat Florida. You're in great shape in the SEC East, especially if everything falls into place and South Carolina starts getting some losses. So, I think Georgia will win that game, but you know we'll see. It should be quite the cocktail party this year. And then you know, the one I'm looking forward to, Navy and Notre Dame. You know, last week, of course, Notre Dame dropped that game to USC. Huge surprise to me. Great call by you. You said that was your upset alert, and well, alert signaled because Notre Dame got beat pretty darn bad by USC. Notre Dame had an NCAA record 43 game winning streak against Navy. I mean, you know, I sometimes wonder why I do some of the things I do when it comes to like picking NFL games, when I just have losing week after losing week. I've never strung together 43 straight losing weeks. You know what I mean? At some point, if I'm Navy, around loss 37, year 37, I say, you know what? We gave this a good run, yeah. Notre Dame. I respect what you guys do. We respect what we are doing. Let's go a different direction. But no, they play the game every year. And then all of a sudden, Navy has won 3 of the last 4, including both of the last 2 in South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Notre Dame is a 20-some-odd point favorite, but who knows with this game? And, you know, Navy's 2-5. This is not, you know, not a great Navy team, but 4 of their 5 losses have been by 3 points or less. So they've been close losses. And Notre Dame got ran all over last week by a USC team that hasn't run the ball that well this season. Navy, we know how they can run. We know how close they pushed it against South Carolina. if they run the football like they're capable of running it, it could be a doomsday scenario for Notre Dame.
Notre Dame better be ready, because they were accused, and this could be a distraction for them this week, they were accused of quitting against USC.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with the run game. Like you said, USC established that running game, ran it all over Notre Dame, and for whatever reason, you know, Brian Kelly was asked about the timeouts and not using them to stop the clock, get the ball back. It did kind of appear from a neutral perspective that they did quit. Against a running team like this one that has a true identity in how they do things, similar to Georgia Tech with the way they like to do it, if Notre Dame lets them do what they've done the last couple of years, especially coming off a week like they had against USC, you're right, this game could go their way again.
Yeah, because USC, yeah, they got the ball back with 7 or 8 minutes left, and they just ran all over Notre Dame, and it was in the body language, and it was, like you said, actions speak louder than words with the timeouts. And Notre Dame just gave up. Now, maybe they, in turn, come out big. You know, there's a reason this one isn't my upset alert. I do think Notre Dame will win this one, but it wasn't a flattering side to Notre Dame last week. For as impressed as I came away with USC, I was equally unimpressed with Notre Dame's performance in that game, and this one could be a lot more fun than the spread would indicate, so we'll find out. Plenty of great games. You know, it's good. Last week, we asked for some madness. We got some madness. This week, we're just asking for some good football games. And
just get us to LSU-Alabama.
From the look of this docket, yeah. Because, yeah, LSU-Alabama, that transcends regular season college football. So if you thought we spent a lot of time on games this week, you wait until next week. But
the season's really starting to shape up, though. It could be a couple of really good weeks in a row.
It is. So, yeah, this has been Running the Option, Episode 8. I'm Dave Consolazio alongside Sam Saig. As always, you can email me at VegasDavesDime@gmail.com.
You can email me at SamSaig@gmail.com.
If you have any questions or comments, thank you guys so much for listening, and we hope to have you back next week.
Take care, everybody.